This is Chris Whippo. I will be your reader for the Danville Commercial News for Sunday, June 2nd, 2019 edition. I'm going to start with the article titled Rediscover Danville. The title is Techstars Startup Weekend by Carol Nichols. Plan now to join us as entrepreneurs and leaders gather in Danville for Techstars Startup Weekend, Small Town Advantage event in partnership with Google for Startups. The 54-hour event will be held on the third floor of Vermilion Hall at Danville Area Community College, 2000 East Main Street in Danville, offering the opportunity to launch new ventures and solve real-world problems. The weekend will begin Friday, June 21st at 6:30 p.m. and end at 9 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd. Since 2007, Techstars Startup Weekend has taken place in over 150 countries with more than 200,000 alumni. Participants take their product or business idea to the next level and join in a huge worldwide network of entrepreneurs. Friendly neighbors, wide open spaces, fresh air, the benefits of rural living are real. And now, with the trend toward remote working and co-working spaces strong and growing, tech companies are realizing that they can work with talented people who live anywhere, including small towns. Techstars believes you can build a great company anywhere and is supporting this new workforce migration. To do so, they are working with community leaders from across the country to support the first ever Techstars Startup Weekend Small Town Advantage Initiative. Techstars Startup Weekend is a hyper-inclusive 54-hour event that lets you experience the highs, lows, fun, and pressure that make up life at a startup. The program is centered on action, innovation, education, and discovery. Participants give 60-second pitches of their company ideas on Friday night, and then everyone forms teams around the top ideas. The rest of the weekend is devoted to mentorship, workshops, and getting out of the building to validate ideas, develop prototypes, and finally pitch the companies on Sunday night to a panel of judges. The experience is exhilarating, it's exhausting, and life-changing. June 21st, 2019 is the kickoff when small towns from around the United States begin coming together to raise awareness of the untapped tech talent pipelines in their communities, and to break the stereotypes around what rural communities have to offer the global economy. Organizers in each community want people to realize that with high-speed connectivity in their communities, there are no barriers to working remote tech roles. Entrepreneurs of all types are encouraged to attend. The biggest takeaway to the process is the process used to develop and test your problem-solving idea. Startup Weekend Danville is a collaboration. It's a collaboration with the TREP School, that's T-R-E-P, the Illinois Small Business Development Center at DAC, Vermilion Advantage, and Newhoff Media to promote both local businesses and entrepreneurial problem solving. Early bird registration is $75 and $25 for students, and it closes on June 14th. To register, visit http://go.startupweekend. That's http://go.startupweekend.org/Danville, Illinois. To learn more about the concept, visit http://www.techstars.com/startup-weekend /. Rediscover entrepreneurship during Startup Weekend Danville this month. And this talks about the author Carol Nichols is the executive director of the Illinois Small Business Development Center at DAC in Danville. She can be reached at 217-442-7232. Okay, that's the end of that article. I'm going to move on to the obituaries now. The first one is Roberta Richardson. Roberta Bobby Richardson, 90 years of age, of Roanoke, Virginia, died on April 24th, 2019. The memorial service was at the Second Presbyterian Church in Salem, Virginia. She will be interred at 4 p.m. June 21st at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville in a plot adjoining her husband. And there will be a reception following the graveside service at First Presbyterian Church in Danville for family and friends. The next obituary is Glenda Lou Haines. That's H-A-I-N-E-S. This is from Kingman, Indiana. Glenda Lou, her maiden name was Conrad Haines, age 70, of rural Kingman, passed away at 9:12 p.m. EDT Friday, May 31st, 2019, at Franciscan Health in Lafayette East, in Lafayette, Indiana. Funeral services will be at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Thursday, June 6, 2019, at Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga. The next obituary is that of Reverend Carol Ann Hart Parker. Reverend Carol Ann Hart Parker, 73 years of age, from Danville, Illinois, went to be with the Lord on May 25, 2019 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A public viewing will take place from noon to 4 p.m. on Sunday, June 2nd, at Leek & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon on Monday, June 3rd at New Life Church of Faith in Danville at 1419 North Bowman with a celebration of life at noon. The next obituary is Christine Chris Gross. That's G-R-O-S-S. Christine Chris Hegg Gross, 89 years of age, of Covington, Indiana, unexpectedly passed away Sunday, May 26, 2019, surrounded by family. A private service was held June 1st. Memorials may be sent to the charity of the donor's choice. The next obituary is that of Gerald A. Alonzo. This is from Catlin. Jerry Alonzo, 73 of Catlin, passed away at 10:50 a.m. Wednesday, May 29, 2019 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral service is at 1 p.m. Thursday, June 6th at Robeson Chapel with Chris Lawler officiating. The visitation is from noon to 1 p.m. Thursday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. The burial will be in Oak Hill Cemetery in Danville. The next obituary is that of Randy Allen Crane. 63 years of age, of Covington, Indiana, passed away at 8:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Wednesday, May 29, 2019, in his home, surrounded by family. A celebration of Randy's life will be at 5 p.m. EDT on Sunday, June 2nd, at Sunset Funeral Home in Covington, and visitation will be from 2 to 5 at the funeral home. Next is James Kochel, K-O-C-H-E-L-L. James Jim Leslie Kochel, 73, of Covington, Indiana, died at 9:41 p.m. on Tuesday, May 28th at Franciscan Hospital in Lafayette, Indiana. Visitation was on Saturday, June 1st, at the Stringtown Church of God in Covington, followed by a memorial service. The next obituary is that of Ralph H. Swanson. This is in Attica, Indiana. Ralph Hubert Swanson, age 95, of Attica, passed away at 12:55 a.m. on Wednesday, May 29th at Williamsport Health and Rehabilitation Center. Friends may call at the Maus Funeral Home in Attica on Tuesday, June 4th from noon until the service time at 2 p.m. with Kenneth Frauman officiating. Burial with military honors will follow at Riverside Cemetery in Attica. The next obituary is that of Larry Young Sr. Larry Eugene Young Sr., 79, of Ridge Farm, Illinois, passed away on Monday, May 27th at Danville VA Medical Center. Funeral services were held on Saturday, June 4th at Crable Funeral Home. And he was buried with military honors. The next obituary is that of Lois June Fulton, F-U-L-T-O-N. Lois June Fulton, 83, of Danville, passed away on Sunday, May 26th at North Logan Healthcare. Messages and memories may be left at our website at www.KrugerCohnPape.com or the Kruger Cohn Pape Funeral Home Facebook page. Per her wishes, she will be cremated with a private family burial at Spring Hill Cemetery. And that was Lois June Fulton's obituary. The next obituary is that of Thomas W. Wolfe. This is from Danville. Thomas W. Wolfe, 93, of Danville, passed away at 9:23 p.m. on Monday, May 20th, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Memorial services will be at 6 p.m. on Monday, June 3rd, at Robeson Chapel in Catlin, with Jay Sorrell officiating. Burial will be at a later date in the National Cemetery in Danville. Visitation is from 5 to 6 p.m. Monday at Robeson. The next obituary is Henry Kochvar. That's K-O-C-H-V-A-R. Henry Hank Kochvar, 88, of Paris, Illinois, passed away at 12:49 a.m. Sunday, May 26th, at the Paris Healthcare Center. Services celebrating his life will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st. They were held on June 1st. And military rites will be conducted by the American Legion Post. The next obituary is that of John Jack Harry Hawes. This is from Cornelius, North Carolina. John Jack Harry Hawes, formerly of Danville, passed peacefully away on March 7th, 2019, after a well-lived life. A memorial celebration of Jack's life will be at noon on Saturday, June 8th, at Holy Family Catholic Church in Danville at 444 East Main Street. He will be laid to rest in Resurrection Cemetery, Danville, and funeral arrangements are by Sunset Funeral Home. The next obituary is that of Elizabeth Burris from Catlin. Elizabeth Burris, 88 years old, lifelong Sidell and Fairmount area resident, passed away at 4:17 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st, in her home at Autumn Fields in Tilton. Funeral services, under the direction of her funeral home family, will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Pastor Mike Roberts will officiate. Burial alongside George will follow in Davis Cemetery west of Fairmount. The visitation for Elizabeth is and her friend for the Friends of Elizabeth is from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Robeson Chapel. The next obituary is that of Mary Dawson from Danville. Mary L. Dawson of Danville died at 11:30 on Tuesday, May 28th. Funeral services will be on Tuesday at 11 a.m. at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. The minister, James Brown, will officiate. Visitation will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday at the funeral home. The next obituary is that of Carol Parker. This is from Danville. Carol Parker, 73 of Danville, died at 10:55 a.m. Saturday, May 25th at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at noon on Monday at New Life Church of Faith at 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Pastor MacArthur Pendleton will officiate, and burial will be at the Danville National Cemetery. There will be a public viewing from noon until 4 on Sunday. That was on Sunday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation will be on Monday, was on Monday at the church. This next article, kind of changing pace here, is called Take the Tour, and it's about the Vermilion County Garden Walk. The subtitle is Beautiful Spots at VA are part of this year's Vermilion County Garden Walk. And this is by Ryan Pankow, who is a horticulture educator with the U of I Extension. This is the beginning of the article. June weather in Illinois is some of the best of the year. After our overly wet spring, I am sure most area gardeners are looking forward to sunny skies ahead and are eager to wrap up any spring gardening plans that were delayed. Sunny June skies will be a welcome addition to the 2019 Vermilion County Garden Walk, as last year was a bit rainy. This year's event features a number of garden spaces that master gardeners are well acquainted with, but the general public often doesn't visit. I'm excited to see all 8 of the featured gardens this year, with several bonus gardens identified along the walk as well. This remarkable event highlights the start of the gardening season, providing gardeners with inspiration from a carefully selected group of area gardens that showcase unique and exquisite gardening practices for one special day each year. In addition to the private homes on the walk, ticket holders will have a unique opportunity to tour the gardens rarely open to the public. A number of the superb garden resources available to veterans at the Danville VA will be highlighted on the garden walk this year. Master Gardener Rhonda Runau calls the VA Healing Garden the best-kept secret at the VA. Runau has been deeply involved since 2013, providing leadership and organization to the project. It's hard to imagine this beautiful and diverse garden as the gravel service drive it once was prior to the extensive investment by the VA to develop the space that we see today. Garden Walk visitors will enjoy the aesthetically beautiful and fully accessible garden space on their tour on June 9th, offering a rare opportunity for the public to view the Healing Garden. Veterans visit the area daily with various spaces such as a picnic area, putting green, shuffleboard, basketball hoop, and gazebo, all intertwined with a wide selection of ornamental plants to provide a recreational area that is also therapeutic. For years, master gardeners have organized several monthly horticulture therapy sessions at the VA, providing both education and therapeutic interactions with plants to enhance the lives of veterans. In recent years, veterans have been offered weekly opportunities to interact with master gardeners as well, enabling the vets to work right alongside master gardeners who maintain the space. The interesting and historic VA greenhouse will also be included in the garden walk. Constructed in the early 1900s, this greenhouse has long served the Danville VA for somewhere around the last 20 years. Master gardeners have actively participated in plant production to support the VA master gardener VA Master Gardener Carol Miller has been the leader of this project, coordinating the efforts of others while devoting many hours of work each year to the project herself. Every year, hundreds of plants are propagated and carefully tended by Miller and her crew until large enough to be planted into various containers around the VA. These plants beautify the grounds and also provide horticulture therapy for veterans and visitors alike. All veterans are invited to visit the greenhouse for tours led by master gardeners to contribute by helping out with various activities. Any vet that comes by is allowed to select plants from a specially propagated stock of the take-home plants. This program has successfully introduced horticulture to the many veterans who participate each year by allowing them to take home a few plants of their own. The Danville Area Community College Land Lab and Sustainable Farm will be another featured garden, which typically is not open to the public. It is normally more focused on student use and research. Supporting numerous educational projects related to curriculum across several departments at the college. Horticulture students have the opportunity to participate in a variety of class projects and research at the farm, while helping to grow veggies that are donated to both the student body and the community food banks. Last year, vegetable production at the farm supported a farm-to-fork dinner, including a delectable menu planned and prepared by the DAC Culinary Arts Program. The dinner is actually part of a farm-to-fork class co-taught by instructors at the Horticulture and Culinary Arts Program. Visitors to the Land Lab and Sustainable Farm will get to see more than just sustainable vegetable production, with other highlights including permaculture plantings, prairie restoration, beehives, and chickens. The 19th annual Vermilion County Garden Walk runs from noon until 5 on June 9th. Tickets are $10 and are available at the Vermilion County Extension Office in Danville, 3164 North Vermilion, or by calling 217-442-8615. That's 217-442-8615. Barry's Garden Center, the Big R in Danville and Tilton, and Danville Gardens North and the main store on Cleary Avenue. Tickets will also be available at Douglas Discovery Garden on the day of the walk. Proceeds from the garden walk fund Master Gardener involvement in educational programs with veterans, children, and community donation gardens in Vermilion County. This next article is called A Murky Situation, and the subtitle is, It's Uncertain Whether the Coal Ash Protections Bill, recently sent for Governor Pritzker's expected signature, will apply to the disputed Middle Fork site. This is by Tracy Crane from the News Gazette, and it's from Newtown. It's not yet clear whether this week's legislation making Illinois the third state in the nation to require significant coal ash protections beyond federal requirements will actually apply at the former Vermilion Power Station property, where toxic coal ash sits along the Middle Fork River, threatening that national wild and scenic waterway. There's no simple yes or no, according to those who have been most involved in writing and supporting the legislation, which currently sits on Governor Pritzker's desk awaiting his signature. We don't know, said Andrew Wren, the director of the Prairie Rivers Network, one of the nonprofit organizations fighting for the removal of coal ash at the Vermilion County site. It isn't a slam dunk, said Lan Richard with EcoJustice, a nonprofit that has advocated for years for complete removal of the coal ash impounded upstream at Kickapoo State Park. Basically, it depends on many things, according to Jennifer Castle, an attorney with Earth Justice, a national nonprofit environmental law organization that has been pursuing protection of the Middle Fork through federal legal channels. It is a poster child for problems coal ash poses, Castle said of the Dynergy site. adding that it was a major motivator for the legislation sponsored by Senator Scott Bennett, Democrat from Champaign, and supported in the House by Representative Carol Ammons, a Democrat from Urbana. The reason there is no simple answer at this point is the legislation goes into effect immediately upon the governor signing it, which is fully expected to happen, according to Bennett, but there are dates in the bill regarding which sites will fall subject to it. The idea, according to Castle, was to be fair to property owners who are already in the midst of cleaning up and closing coal ash sites around the state, so they wouldn't have to start over, she said. So the bill contains language providing exceptions for those that have submitted a closure plan to the state by May 1st, with Dynergy has done for the Vermilion site. But property owners must also finish their closure plan within 24 months of the effective date of the legislation for them to fall under the exception. The second part is an unknown for Dynergy, which has not yet started executing a closure plan at the Middle Fork site. Will this squeeze into that small window? Wren asked, adding that he doesn't believe Dynergy is likely to have a closure plan accepted and executed within that two-year window. So I think in the end it will end up covering Vermilion. And other factors likely will affect whether Dynergy makes the window. In March, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency referred the Dynergy site to the State Attorney General for enforcement actions, asking that office to enforce three actions: closure of the coal ash pits, stabilization of the eroding riverbank separating the pits from the waterway, and third, the payment of a fine for past violations at the site. Later that month, Earth Justice, on behalf of Prairie Rivers Network, filed a complaint with the Illinois Pollution Control Board, alleging Dynergy has violated Illinois law by allowing toxic pollution from its Vermilion coal ash pits to leach into groundwater and the river. Both legal matters are ongoing. Richards said that even if the Dynergy site doesn't fall under the new legislation, he believes the Illinois Attorney General's office and courts may apply the same principles spelled out in it to the property. Wren agreed, saying the courts will likely be aware of State Bill 9, so that they wouldn't move forward with orders that are not compliant with the legislation. Reichert said that in his opinion, he expects the IEPA and Attorney General's office would apply the legislation's basic principles, including public input on the closure plan, financial assurances from Dynergy to pay for cleanup and closure, and serious consideration given in the closure plan to removal of the coal ash from three pits along the Middle Fork, rather than capping them and leaving the ash in place. I think the act is still a great victory, Richard said, adding that it lays out some solid principles in regard to coal ash and will establish some rules for the state that will apply to a number of site closures in the future. This has been my pleasure to read for you from the Vermilion County News, dated June 2nd, 2019. Thank you.